on the 570 Extreme Weather Center.
Well, I promise you that this conversation was scheduled in our calendar to be had this morning, just after 10 a.m., before yesterday's fatal shooting in downtown Kitchener. But wouldn't you know, less than 24 hours after shots rang out near a high school in our city, Rod Giltaka, who is the CEO and executive director of the Canadian Coalition for Firearm Rights, sits down with us in studio for a conversation. And since Rod is here, and Rod being the kind of guy that Rod is, he says, you want to talk about firearms? You want to talk about Bill C-71? Let's do that. And our phone lines are open during this segment with Rod at 519-570-2545, star 570, and 1-800-570-5715. So if you think a guy like Rod needs to be put on the hot seat, go ahead, because he says he's willing to take those phone calls and questions this morning. It's good to see you in studio. We've talked on the phone before. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Does it make it difficult for you to come in for a conversation like this? As I said, it was scheduled a few days ago, and here you are less than 24 hours after a shooting in downtown Kitchener, which doesn't happen a whole lot in these parts. Does that make you anxious coming into a conversation like this?
Not at all. And we had a word before we came on about this particular shooting. In fact, this particular shooting proves the point. If you look at the circumstances around it, it was a shooting at a Salvation Army property perpetrated by two men in a four-door white Mercedes. So you'd think, well, maybe there's drugs involved in that. Maybe there's some other criminal activity aside from the shooting itself. And it's consistent with what we've been saying all along. These shootings are perpetrated by criminals. I doubt very highly, and I'm even being, rhetorical when I say I'm sure that that wasn't a licensed gun owner. And, we're just focusing on the wrong place if we really want public safety.
And we have been focusing a lot these past many months on firearms and firearm control because Toronto has seen another summer of the gun, as we call it. Now, I know, Rod, that you hail from British Columbia, but I know that the news also gets out there. So just as a Canadian citizen, let's just put aside for a moment that you are a firearms owner and your role with the Canadian Coalition for Firearms Rights. But how do you feel as a Canadian citizen when you hear the stories and see what's been happening in Toronto around gunfire and gunplay?
Well, as I've said before on your show, gun owners are regular Canadians, and we want a safer Canada too. And the fact that we're really not taking action on gangs and the people that are doing these shootings is a double-edged sword for us. We're being blamed for that activity, which of course is ridiculous. And at the same time, there's no, the work's not being done to prevent that stuff. And people are being shot, and that, it's weird for a gun owner to be, I'm the one that's raising the alarm. And it just doesn't seem to be a priority for the government at this time.
We know that gun control is likely to form part of our federal election campaign. We're about a year away now from the next federal election, and there has been talk of everything right down to a handgun ban in this country. How much does Bill C-71 concern you as a licensed firearms owner?
There's a variety of measures in C-71 that are of concern, other than one. Let's look at it from the negative point of view. The only one that actually would address some of our problems with violent behavior, because gun violence is just violent behavior involving firearms, is the money for the guns and gang stuff. The $327 million that we've been hearing about for 3 years, over 3 years. It was an election promise from the Liberals, yet no money has gone out of that fund 3 years later, and all of these shootings later. Now, the other provisions, I'll just make a blanket statement over all of them, because to pick them apart one by one would take a long time. But all of the other measures are all aimed squarely at licensed gun owners. So unless you can show that licensed gun owners are a problem, then how would you expect that those measures are going to cut down on the shootings that are happening?
So would a handgun ban work, or is it simply a politically charged piece of rhetoric?
It's 100% politically charged rhetoric. And the issue there is handguns are essentially already banned. You can't legally possess a handgun in Canada without a license. And to do so, especially if you stole that handgun, you'd be looking at life in prison. That's on the books today. So how come there aren't all these improper, unauthorized users of handguns in jail for life? In fact, there was a case, firearm trafficking case in British Columbia, where a woman had gotten a PAL. This is one of the very rare situations where these straw purchases actually occur. We find that they almost never occur, despite what you've been told. But the government's now backing up on their previous claim of domestically sourced firearms. This woman bought a variety of handguns, sold them to gangs. She was caught. The judge in his decision said, this is one of the most heinous crimes that someone could commit in Canada, because a lot of those guns were never recovered. And they're still floating around, you know, being used as tools to shoot people. And so she got 3.5 years. So I don't know how you can commit one of the most heinous crimes we can as citizens. You get 3.5 years. It's very hypocritical. I don't know what they're thinking.
I was going to ask about that very case, Rod, yeah. because I've talked about it on the show. I wrote about it with my weekly column in the Kitchener Post, and I find it remarkable, quite frankly, especially again with the judge in the case referring to it as one of the most serious crimes one can commit in Canada, and yet it carries a 3.5 year prison term. It's absolutely bizarre.
Well, the 3 years was the mandatory minimum, if I'm not mistaken. So he gave her another 6 months, but as a licensed gun owner who follows every law and every regulation, no matter how ridiculous and how ineffective, because I know this stuff, right? I read a little about, you know, gun regulation, and you know, the thought of a licensed gun owner straw purchasing for gangs. I mean, if it were me, I would be just dropping the hammer on these people. You know, it's the ultimate betrayal.
Something that I saw in that case, and I'm from the outside looking in, I do not have a firearms license, but I've done some reading, but I thought that it actually demonstrated that our system works pretty well, and one of the keys to it, in my opinion, was it was a gun store employee that raised the red flag because of this woman's purchasing habits. So do we have enough checks and balances on firearms in this country already?
Well, we do. We have more than enough. And interestingly enough, in the licensing system in Canada, when you apply for a PAL, you have to provide if you're married, your spouse has to sign off, and your spouse can be contacted and interviewed. You can be interviewed as well in that process. And you have to provide two more references of people that have known you for 3 years or longer. And I hear stories quite often of people saying, yeah, I was never called and none of my references were called. And my spouse was never called. So there's a system that's being apparently funded, and that's the system that's supposed to keep guns out of people's hands, make it more difficult for criminals to get their hands on firearms. And that system isn't being implemented, but now you want more bureaucracy on top of that. How about we just step back, reassess, and why don't you start calling the references when people are applying for PALs? I mean, how many people would be prevented from getting firearms that shouldn't have them just in that process that exists today?
So you think that's happening right now, that people are going through the process, not being vetted properly and getting firearms licenses when they shouldn't be?
Well, it's hard for me. Like, I don't claim to determine what proper vetting is because I don't work at the firearms program. But I do know, because I'm an instructor, I've run 4,000 people through the Canadian Firearm Safety Course in 10 years. I do know that people are getting PALs and none of their references were contacted and they weren't contacted. So, you know, maybe staff that up. Maybe get people talking on the phone to make sure that they can identify some issues early if there's a problem. So there's a lot of options. And of course, your PAL can be revoked any time, even upon rumor, you know, that you're thinking of violent acts or danger to yourself. So there's a really stringent system there that is implemented to what degree, I don't know. But the last thing we need is more legislation that's going to be half implemented.
Take me through the process, Rod, from the time if I wanted to tomorrow begin the process of obtaining my firearms license. What steps am I going through?
So one of the things that we should note right off the bat is it takes about 6 months on average And it costs the average person probably around $400 by the time you finish paying for everything. So to get a restricted and non-restricted firearms license, so regular hunting rifles and shotguns plus handguns, let's say, since we're talking about handguns so much, you have to take a two-day safety course. You have to pass it with 80% or more. That includes practical testing and written testing. And of course, you have to listen to the instructor like me blabber on for 2 days. A lot of people know something about guns, so it's excruciating for them, but you have to do that, and it's mandatory. Then you have to go through the application process where you provide all of your personal history, all the stuff that I said already, so I won't repeat that. But you have to disclose whether you've been on medications, your mental health history. There's a deep criminal background check that happens. And you know, once you've applied for all this stuff, at some point in the following months, you'll get a PAL. Then at that point, your name is run through CPIC, every single 24 hours, as if you're having an interaction with law enforcement and they suspect you of committing a criminal offense. So I'll give you an example, and this is actually quite important. A lot of people don't know this. If you get pulled over on the side of the road, and you give the officer any indication that something's not right with this person, they'll go back and they'll run a CPIC check on you to see if there's any warrants and any interactions with law enforcement. They can look up notes on those interactions, all that kind of stuff. And that's usually reserved for people who are suspected of an offense. But we get that check run every single day. So we are the most tightly controlled, most highly vetted citizens in the country. And this is why a lot of this stuff gets a little frustrating for us.
You mentioned a moment ago this idea of domestically sourced firearms and how many of them there are being used in the commission of crimes in Canada. And this has been a debate, Rod, that has really surfaced over the last many months, given the violence we've seen in Toronto. And we had, and I remember it was one detective in Toronto who was quoted as saying, I believe the number was up to half now of guns were being sourced domestically. And we've run with that and we've kind of taken it as gospel. Do we know, is there information available to tell us how many guns being used in crimes in Canada have been sourced domestically?
So there was an access to information request to the Toronto Police Service, which was fulfilled, that showed that they've known the whole time they've had these numbers that 9% were what they would, of crime guns, they would consider domestically sourced. And actually at this past year in 2017, it's at a 4-year low. So not over 50% or 60% that was floated around. Now remember, John Tory quoted that number, and so did the chief of police, Mark Saunders, the chief of police. You'd think that if he was going to start throwing percentages around, he would have checked first. He knows this stuff because I don't think he's incompetent. I think he knows. But they flat out lied. And then if you look at that 9% and you look at the criteria, they include starter pistols, air guns, pellet guns, replicas, and toy guns in those 9% that are domestically sourced as firearms. So what is the real number? And, you know, it's funny. I'm having to defend gun owners all the time. But, wow, look at the deception going on. And it's not even just deception for public relations or electoral reasons. They want to support new legislation based on these assertions. And Goodale did the same thing. The RCMP said flat out, A, we don't really trace guns to their origin. Only 29% of the time we can even find out where a gun came from. And only half of those, which is 14%, they figure are domestically sourced, but they don't really know. And they add all these other things that aren't actually guns. So very different story than that, what they were telling to support this new legislation.
Do you, Rod, have any reports? Do you analyze any data to try to determine where these firearms are coming from? And I'll come back full circle to where we started. There was a shooting yesterday in downtown Kitchener. Can we deduce where that firearm may have originated?
Well, the problem with guns is, you know, we've got a very long, completely undefended border. You know, where I'm from in Vancouver, down along the U.S. border, there's a street called Zero Avenue because we have numbered streets there. Start from zero at the border and move upwards. And through long stretches of Zero Ave, there's a road on the U.S. side, a ditch, and then a road on the Canadian side where you could literally throw a handgun across the border. So, you know, to even, let's say domestically sourced firearms, let's say it was actually true. Obviously, it's not. But let's say that was a real problem. If you cut off domestic sources, what's going to happen? Well, the price is going to go up. It's going to become more profitable for criminals to smuggle guns across the United States. It's very easy to do so. So it's the path of least resistance. So what I'm saying is, it's not a problem with access to firearms. That's a very common myth. It's not access to firearms. There's 20 million guns in Canada. It's the problem is we have a gang problem. We have a crime problem. We have a problem with people having the willingness, and more this year certainly, to shoot other human beings with firearms. So whether it's firearms or cars or trucks or bombs or knives, we have a violence problem. And to ignore that and to further regulate an already highly regulated segment of our society, that's not going to solve our problem. That's just bad governance.
We're in studio with Rod Giltaka. He's the CEO and executive director of the Canadian Coalition for Firearms Rights. Federal conservative leader Andrew Scheer has said if he's elected, he'll repeal Bill C-71. We'll get Rod's take on that, and phone lines are open to you as well as we continue on the Mike Farwell Show. This is 570 News and Rogers TV.
Making your smart speaker even smarter.
Alexa, play 570 News.
Playing 570 News.
We're in studio this morning with Rod Giltaka, who is the CEO and executive director of the Canadian Coalition for Firearm Rights. And he is willing to take your calls on anything firearms related. We're going to talk more about Andrew Scheer, federal conservative leader, and Bill C-71 in just a moment. But Doug is on the phone and wants to talk to Rod this morning.
Hi.
Good morning, Doug. Sorry, Rod, are you on? Can you hear Doug okay?
No.
Should I press the on button?
No, and then there's a headphone click on there,
it's
so you should be okay. All right, here we go.
Okay,
Doug,
can
go
you hear
ahead.
Me now?
Yeah, we're all fine. We got it sorted out.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I want to thank you, first of all, for having Rod on, because we really need to get some actual facts from actual experts out to the public. My biggest concern right now with the Bill C-71 is with the background check expansion. I personally have our pal, I have handguns, I go out on a regular basis and shoot with my boys. Because of something that, a stupid mistake, 8 days after my 18th birthday, I may very well be refused a renewal on my RPAL after, and like in subsequent years, I have detained no less than 3 drunk drivers and an armed robbery suspect for police. I have had my firearm safety instructor's certification and hunter certification. I'm a certified search and rescue observer. I'm a certified first responder. I was a firefighter. All of that means nothing because of a mistake I made 44 years ago. I want to know how taking my ability to own firearms away is going to do anything for public safety.
All right, Doug, it sounds to me, Rod, like a familiar refrain from legal gun owners.
Well, it you know, the Liberals are the government of second chances, apparently, right? If you look at Bill C-75, they're reducing, they're providing summary conviction options for some terrible crimes, including terrorism and recruiting young people into gangs. But yet when it comes to gun owners, they want to look at every single thing in your past. So that's been an issue for Bill C-71 for exactly the reasons that the caller is mentioning. Also for veterans, because veterans, after they serve their country, a lot of times they see things that people shouldn't see. And they come home and they report their problems and get treatment for them. But yet now they may be subjected to having their firearms license pulled because they were seeking help. And that might even discourage some other people from seeking help. So it's they're looking in the wrong place to reduce violence, for sure.
We're fast running short on time, but in light of that, how encouraged are you that Andrew Scheer has made it very clear he has pledged to repeal C-71 if elected?
Well, certainly for the firearms community, it was time that he had come out and in defense of Canada's most vetted and proven safe community, right? Criminal record check every day. So I assure you, if there was a problem with licensed gun owners, they wouldn't have to lie and pad stats to prove it. So I'm glad that he's done that. And, I'm pretty confident. Scheer's pretty pretty careful. And I'm pretty confident if there's something that he can do to enhance public safety, he would do that. And certainly he, I'm encouraged that he will not give in to this demagoguery about firearms and just focus on the real task at hand, which is to reduce gang violence and violent behavior in general.
We have had, Rod, the chance to speak on a number of occasions. This is the first time in person. I appreciate you making time. And just real quick, we've caught you here en route to Woodstock. So the flight lands last night. You stop in the region on your way to Woodstock. What takes you there this weekend?
There's an event at Select Shooting Supplies. Hopefully I'm getting that name right.
But I put you on the spot.
Yeah, exactly. But there's a range day there, and there's going to be lots of people and manufacturers, and you can shoot guns, and it's going to be a great time.
I know we'll talk again by phone. But when you're in the area, please do stop by. It's good to have you in studio.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you, Mike.
Rod Giltaka, the CEO, Executive Director of the Canadian Coalition for Firearm Rights, joining us in studio. We will do this again, and Rod is always open to taking your questions. Time is always our enemy. An update on the way from the 570 News Center. And after that, the Rangers are back, and so is the Coaches Show.